Thanks, everybody. We're going to start.
Oh, it's over here because Kathy will yell at me. We'll get started a couple minutes early. Mike, thank you very much for coming, for your interest in this position, your application. I think you know how this process goes. We will turn it back to you for some opening comments. 5 minutes or so on why you're seeking a seat on the Board of Regents. We'll come back over here and ask a series of questions, and then you have the opportunity for some closing comments all in about 45 minutes. So, Mr. Kanyani, we'll turn it back to you.
All right. Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for your time. I seriously do mean that. All the interviews you have to do, you know, what you folks are doing here is nothing short of a great public service. So I thank you all for your time. You know, I'm excited to be considered for this position. A little bit about myself. You know, I was born in Nairobi, Kenya. So, you know, if you drew out 200 versions of my life, that very few of them would have had me sitting right here, you know, in front of this committee being considered for this. My family moved to Minnesota when I was 5, so, you know, I've grown up here my whole life. Moved around a bit, Brooklyn Park, Bloomington, but settled in Maple Grove in 2004. It was very different than it is now. And I went through the District 279 school system there, and graduated from Maple Grove Senior High School in 2015. Was a bit confused then, wasn't really sure where I'd go next, and luckily landed at University of Minnesota Duluth. I had a friend in student government that just as a joke, he was like, you know, you should join this thing. And I'm quoting, he said, so we could have two Kenyans in a row in this position. And so I checked it out. Wasn't sure what I was getting into, and kind of fell in love with, you know, student government and what it afforded me to do and how it defined my campus experience. You know, I think everyone's an expert at pointing out issues, and I found that there was this place where you could actually work on them, you know, and explore that a little deeper and find out, well, how do we work on solutions, and I enjoyed that a lot. I was able to, in my sophomore year, serve as the representative to the Board of Regents, so attended all the board meetings. You know, for that year, I was the student rep on the finance committee, and you know, was able to give input on that and speak at those meetings and really see how complex the university is and what goes behind governing it. And then in my junior year and my senior year, I've been very fortunate to serve the students as the student body president. I've learned a lot from this experience. I've learned a lot from this experience and have come to love the university, the opportunities it has afforded me on a personal scale, but also what it does for our state, what it means to our state on the much larger and grander scale. I think the student seat is extremely important, to have that student perspective, and to have someone on the board that, you know, is still paying student loans, you know, when we're discussing them and things of that nature, I think is important, and I'm excited to bring that perspective to the board. And with that, I'll welcome your questions.
Well, thank you very much. I will start with the first question, which is about the University of Minnesota's land grant mission. Obviously, the University of Minnesota is our state's land grant university. What does that mean to you, and what do you think it should mean to the people of Minnesota?
That's an excellent question. I think as a land grant institution, it means the university is the state's. You know, it's not the president's, it's not the board's, it's the state, and it should serve the state. The U of M has a three-part mission, research, teaching, and outreach, and in each of those three parts, there should be an aspect of that is serving the people of Minnesota, and that is giving back to the state. Whether that's in terms of probably the most tangible and the most obvious, producing our workforce, right? Taking in students, educating them, and then spitting is not a great word, but outputting them back into society to contribute as our doctors, our nurses, you know, our lawyers, and our professors, and so on and so forth. And I think that's huge, and that's really important. But also, you know, on the research and outreach side, that's huge as well. I recently read, and some of you may have, about this. There's researchers at the U of M who partnered with a local mosque and the imam there to help understand why the Somali community had such low cancer testing rates. And they partnered with them to understand what are the cultural differences or the religious beliefs that make that happen, and then how can we help educate this community on why this is important. And I think that was huge, and you see that, you see how they met them where they were, right? And partnered with the leaders of that community, and we see that happening in so many ways. So, yeah.
Council Member Menon.
Thank you for being here today, Mr. Kenyanya. Mm-hmm. See that you're a Timberwolves fan. How are you feeling about Ryan Saunders?
Well, he's the only undefeated coach in the NBA right now, so I'd say I feel pretty good about him.
No, that's really true. My actual question revolves around the issue of crisis management, and obviously, serving on the Board of Regents, you will see a fair number of crises, I assume, as we have in the last few years. So I have a couple of questions within this subject. So first, how do you widely see the issue of crisis management? What do you think are the most important aspects? And then after that, as a student region, the only region that will be representing a demographic as opposed to a geographic area, how do you think that, you know, that affects your view on crisis management?
Excellent question. I preferred the first one, but I'll answer this one as well. Crisis management is huge. Obviously, the Board of Regents is going to be tasked with handling some crises. Ideally, there would be none, but they're going to happen, and you have to be prepared. So, and I think that's the first thing, being prepared before the crisis happens. Are there plans put in place? Is there a protocol? Crisis can't happen, and then we're like, oh, wait, what do we do now? There should be a plan that's pre-established, practiced, vetted, that's already in place, a playbook that you go to, and who do we get in the room, depending on what the situation is, and how do we go about this? Who's the authority on this specific situation? And then, you know, something that's also important is you want to communicate to the campus community and to the university community that you're aware of the crisis, that you're handling it, but you don't want to speak before you have all the facts, right? It's tempting to make a conclusion, to make a judgment, to take a stance, but I think it's important to get out and say, hey, this is happening. We've gathered these folks in the room. We've launched this investigation, whatever, depending on the cases, but we don't have all the facts yet, and we're going to wait till we have them before we move forward or make decisions or anything like that. And that's already in place. There's definitely ways to improve that. But for example, last week there was a text you emergency alert, you know, for students at the Duluth campus that there was someone on campus with a weapon. Ended up not being the case. But, you know, UMD Police Department handled that professionally. I had the chance to reach out to our Chief of Police, Sean Halls, and he explained that a little further. I spoke with our Associate Vice Chancellor, and they have a response team that meets in Darland, and they activated that. And if campus wasn't safe, they have a backup place that's already designated to meet. So these things are already in place. They should be reviewed and practiced and you know, executed. So I think that's important. Responding to a crisis starts with being prepared, not in the moment. And then in terms of being the student regent in that specific situation, I think it's huge in just in terms of the perspective you bring. You know, people on the board have lots of experience, and they were all students at one point. That point was a while ago, so it may not be, sorry to our members in the crowd, but you know, you're the one who has that perspective that knows, hey, a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, if I was a student in you know, my dorm and this was happening, what would I be thinking? What would I want to know? What would I want to hear from the administration and from the board? Thank you.
Thank you.
Council Member Carlson.
You have a great advantage in that you were a student region. You were a rep to the regents, and you attended committee meetings and full board meetings. And every meeting that I've been to recently, you've been there. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to think back and think about an issue that you saw happen that if you had been on the Board of Regents, you would have said, that's important, I have something to say, and I'm going to have the courage to say it. What was it? What would you have said?
This advantage is sounding like a disadvantage now with that tough question. No, excellent question. I had the excellent opportunity of serving as the student regent to the board with the two regents in the room. And I think my very first board meeting, I actually wasn't a student rep. So I was elected into that role to start in the fall, but I went to the meetings in the spring just to kind of understand what is this thing, you know, what is this board. My very first board meeting, I was in the audience and there was students protesting over several things, but I think it was the meeting where they were approving the budget. And at that meeting, there's a budget forum where, like at a city council meeting, you know, where there's a microphone and you sign up, you get, you know, two minutes or whatever to speak about that. And students took advantage of that, but then also others protested because they felt their message wasn't being heard by the board. And it was unfortunate that University of Minnesota Police Department had to get involved, and that was my introduction to the board. In terms of that, I think the core issue there was students feeling like they're not heard by the board, and that the board isn't accessible. That is the only meeting where any student or anyone can go and speak to the board. And you know, I've had conversations with board members. UMD Student Association, last year, I think, we passed a resolution and sent it to the board, asking the board to create open forums at every single meeting, you know, that people can sign up for and go speak. There's 8 student reps to the board. It's an extremely important position. I'm glad I had it, and I'm glad it exists, and it does a lot to make sure that students are represented at the board. But, you know, we're talking 60,000 students, and, you know, there was about 8 of us. So I think it's extremely important to have that access to the board. You know, and we sent a letter to the board about that. That issue, I would open up access to the board in other ways, namely allowing people to speak at an open forum at all meetings, or at least more than one. The board doesn't necessarily have to engage them, you know, and start getting in a back and forth. I don't know if that'd be productive, but to at least sit and listen.
Follow up, please.
Yes.
At the December 12th Regents meeting, and you were there, I believe this was a slip of the tongue by one of the regents, but he's called Duluth a second choice university when he was talking about the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
I'll ask you the question first. But you're a good listener. Let's say you were at the regents' table then. What would you have done during the meeting or after the meeting if you heard that?
So let me first say, I don't specifically remember that. I believe you that it happened, but I don't remember the region or whatever. But I mean, I probably would have made a comment there in a facetious way, but then maybe approached the member after. I think it's important that the board not only appears, but is, you know, united and connected. And I think there's different appropriate avenues and settings for certain discussions. That idea and that general feeling about, you know, the different campuses and where they fall within the system is there, and it's present. And it's an issue, you know, I have lots of opinions on. And, you know, it's something, you know, President Gable said, I think, at that meeting that, you know, when she was asked what did she hear when she did her tour of all the campuses, it was, how does the system work like a system? How can we improve that, right? I don't know that I would have made a scene out of it, maybe a light jab, but then followed up by a private conversation.
Good answer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Council members, next question. Councilmember Rogers. I was expecting you, Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your application. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my question has to do, I'll get to it in a minute, about having to do with the professional education. But the Duluth campus has a very prominent part of that professional education. I'm talking about the medical school. And, you know, the practicing physicians in the state, 80% of them come from the university. A very major part of the budget at the university has to do with health sciences, not just medical education, but health sciences in general. The issue, as we see it, is the, or as I see it, the medical school's rankings nationally, going back a couple of decades, were much higher than they are now. It was consistently in the top 10 in the country when you go back that far. Now it's commonly much lower than that. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, how do you see this, or what? Or how do you approach improving those standings?
That's an excellent question. And that's an excellent question. The medical school's rankings have dipped. And you started that by saying you're asking about professional schools, and I think the law school is struggling as well, you know, in terms of enrollment and things like that. First and foremost, I don't know that that's a... that it is a U of M issue, but it's also higher education issues if you're talking about, you know, the law school and things like that. And I think there's probably things in the higher education landscape that are happening and are changing that are affecting that. But, you know, since I was a freshman, this has been a conversation at the board. How do we get back up to the top? How do we, you know, improve this? In terms of the specifics of, you know, how the med school is ran and all that stuff, I'm not very sure. You know, but what I would suggest is looking at those who have been successful in the landscape. We know there's less people applying to law school, but there's law schools that are doing fine. And you know, same with the med school, what are others doing? The board often looks at peer institutions, and I think that's a good comparator. To try to understand what other schools did to be successful and what we haven't done. I don't think you can just take a solution and apply it. Minnesota is a different state than other states, and not every solution is going to fit everywhere. But I think you can learn from some other places in terms of that, and learn, are we adapting to, you know, the changing landscape and this and that.
Thank you for the answer, and I might add that that's a bit of a fair unfair question for a student.
Appreciate that caveat.
Councilmember Moore.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Candidate Kenyanya. Two questions. First question is, do you know who Ellie Brimmeyer is from Maple Grove High School?
I can't say that I do.
All right, so we're going to have to mark that down.
So. Oh, Ellie, yeah.
You know, okay. The reason I ask is I was the captain of the Minneapolis Aquatinio, and she was my princess from the community of Maple Grove. So, just wondering.
Okay.
All right. Back to the business.
I'll track her down,
back
promise.
Back to the business at hand. So, Michael, I would really love to know, who have been some of your most influential mentors growing up, and what values have they instilled in you that you will bring to this position if voted to the Board of Regents?
Yeah. First, my mom. It's an easy answer, but it's a true one. My parents, but, you know, you got to start with mom. what I learned growing up, you know, in the household I did, was just to love people. And to, you know, my parents are community people. If so-and-so's family, someone passed, you know, my mom was the first one there with hot pots, you know, full of food and whatnot, and might even spend the night there. You know, part of that is cultural, but a lot of it's my mom. You know, if someone needed a place to stay, it was our house. You know, I think maybe part of that was the immigrant experience. You know, when we first moved here, we lived at separate places. You know, I was hosted by here, and some of my family was here. So, you know, as we were blessed to, you know, get our own house and whatnot, we did the same for others. So every year, someone that had gotten a green card, we were hosting, or this family or that family. And that's never gone away from me, and just, you know, wanting to help people. One, because it's the right thing, but two, you know, people will help you too, and people have helped you. And, you know, you could just see that with my parents. They didn't forget that, you know, when we came here with nothing, there's people who hosted us, and they paid that back, you know, to a lot of people. So my parents... my mother, but my parents, that's a big one. And then other mentors that have influenced me. I think two of my mentors at UMD through my student government work are our associate vice chancellor for student life, Corbin Smythe, and our vice chancellor for student life, Dr. Lisa Irwin, and they just, I mean, in so many ways, they've guided me, you know, through student government, through working in the university and working for students. And what I've learned through them and through that experience is how many sides there are to an issue, and to consider all of them. I was having this conversation with them recently, and you know, freshman year, you know, I'd see an issue, and I'd be like, oh, that's horrible. Why would they ever put that policy? We need to break down their office door right now, you know. And then now you look at it, you're like, okay, well, why did the faculty feel that way, and why did the staff feel that way? And you'll find that there's a legitimate reason why faculty feel that way, and why staff feel this way, and why students are here. And we're on different sides of it, but none of us are wrong. You know, there's just different perspectives, and I've learned through them and through that to take an input and to look at different perspectives.
Thank you. Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a six-year position, and you're in an excellent position right now to represent students, being a student yourself and involved in student government, but you'll be graduating soon.
And that's the plan. Pending.
I'm planning on it. And we'd like to know, perhaps, what are your plans after graduation? And as a non-student, how will you maintain contact and do an adequate job of representing the students within the university system?
Thank you, Senator Clausen. You know, I think, and you know, in speaking with folks about this, that question has come up, or at least the first part of it, in that you're not going to be a student, you know, soon. And in some ways, I see that as an advantage. Not that I'm not going to be a student, but that I've gone through, you know, the entire process of it, you know, from being a high school senior, considering colleges, and looking at the U of M from the outside, and do I want to go here, to applying, to being a freshman, you know, who changed his major three or four times like everyone else, to attending the university, and to now almost being on the other side, you know, looking at jobs, and what is this university degree going to get me? And I see that as an advantage. But in terms of my immediate plans, you know, I want to enter the workforce somewhere here and gain some experience, and then go back to grad school, you know. And so one of my mentors, you know, told me that, or just advised me to not go to grad school right away, and that you know, when you work, you'll have a lot more experience to bring back, you know, when you're pursuing that graduate degree. In terms of how will I stay connected, I think that's just very easy for me. In terms of I like going to events. I like, you know, being around campus. You know, I like going to games. I like going to the shows and the plays. And I don't know why that should stop at that point. And I would just continue interfacing with students, whether it's through, you know, organized student government and things like that, but also just being on campus and having that presence on campus. But, you know, I think the statute says that you have to be a student at the time of election. And, you know, when I read that, I think what it's really getting after is that you have that student perspective, you know, that's still fresh in your mind. Because if what they were looking for is just whether or not you're enrolled, then, Mr. Senator, you could sign up for a couple credits and run for the student regent seat. So, yeah, but I don't mean to give you ideas. I think you beat me.
Very good.
Councilmember Hipsch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've talked a little bit about systems and kind of the connection between Duluth and the Twin Cities campus and the other system campuses. But as we think a little bit more broader about higher education across the state of Minnesota, we have a private college system, we have the Minnesota state system, and other areas. What's the role of the regions and yourself, if you were a region, to think and make partnerships beyond the University of Minnesota system?
That's an excellent question. We absolutely have to be communicating and working with Minnesota State. and the private colleges as well. And I don't mean to say that it's not happening. It may already be happening, and I don't know of it. But you know, Minnesota State and U of M have different roles to play in our higher education landscape, and slightly different missions, but they're public institutions that are supposed to educate our workforce and serve our state in different ways. But you know, I think there's definitely an opportunity to for those two systems and the private ones as well to come to the table and try to understand what this system's strengths are. And what this system's strengths are, right? And see maybe if a weakness of ours is a strength of yours. You know, if we have a program in Crookston that's just not working out, we're not getting the enrollment, and it's not working well, and we find out Mankato is doing very well, and they're outputting enough people in that profession to meet the state's needs, then, you know, we, as the U of M, we might say, all right, well, maybe we'll get out of that business. We'll let Mankato do that. And what are you struggling with that we actually do really well? And we'll double down on that and reinvest in that. So that should be happening. Again, I'm not saying that it's not, but I just coordination in making sure we're taking advantage of our core competencies, but also our geographical locations. Some things only make sense in certain places. It's a no-brainer that Duluth does water research. We got this big lake right there, you know, and there's other research that can only happen in other places. So, yeah.
Vice Chair Taylor.
Thank you, Dan. Mike, you may not know it, but you and I shared a common success in May of 2018. You were advocating for Glen Sheen, and I was advocating for Pillsbury Hall. And both of those university programs were funded in the bonding bill. What did you learn in your advocacy on behalf of Glen Sheen that will help inform how you will proceed on behalf of your candidacy if you are selected to advance to the next step?
First of all, congratulations. I didn't know we were both doing that. I guess I knew what I was doing, but that's a great question. What did I learn from my advocacy of Glen Sheen? Well, first is persistence, because we've been advocating for Glen Sheen since, you know, my first day in student government.
Pillsbury Hall, Paul Taylor, 1996.
Right, and exactly. It's persistence. You know, Glen Sheen was always a good project, but what I learned spending time here at the Capitol is that there's a lot of good projects. They're actually all good projects. So there's that reality. Money is finite. I now know that when I was young, I always used to ask, why can't we just print more money? But I now know, you know, that you can't do that. And I think, so one thing I learned from that is persistence. And then two, understanding what else is going on around. You know, part of the reason Glen Sheen wasn't getting the support it needed isn't because legislators didn't want to. It's because there's other things. There's other competing things. And I think, you know, learning that will be helpful on the board, because some things are affected by what's going around, what might not be in your control, what may be happening across the state or, you know, or over here will affect some of what you're trying to accomplish. So one, just being persistent, being consistent, and looking at what else is happening around it and how that may be affecting what you're trying to do.
Thank you.
Council Member Wakefield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Kenyanya, for being here today and for your willingness to serve. I work in the mental health field, and so I was glad to see on your bio here that you've included that as something that's important in student outcomes. And I was wondering, from your perspective, do you think the mental health needs of students are being adequately met at this time on all campuses? And if not, how would you prioritize that as a regent?
Excellent question. The meeting of mental health needs has greatly increased in my time at the U of M. When in my freshman year, the reps to the board, that was their main topic for their report to the board. So when I came in my sophomore year, they had already done that. The board had allocated some funds towards that, and you know, I thought that was done. But we had a student, Lauren, that was the chair of our group, that said we need to keep pushing this. That's not enough. And I'm almost ashamed to say it now, but I was convinced we were doing fine on that topic at first. And I was like, I don't know if that needs to be our report topic. And she said, go back to your various campuses and just do some research and just ask around. And we did, and we found out it was a much bigger issue than we thought. And that's one point I want to make about mental health. It's not always visible. You know, even if it's there, you know, it's not like some physical things that you're going to see, but it's there. So, you know, we ended up making it a report topic. I had the honor of co-presenting that report to the board in March. And as a result of that, we focused on the greater Minnesota campuses in that report. And a lot of additional resources, you know, were put forward in Duluth. The result of that was two additional counselors. So I think absolutely the board and administration have done a lot to do better in that. I think we kind of have to wait maybe and see what the effect of that is, you know, because some of those counselors were just hired maybe a year ago. So go back and look, okay, how much have wait times gone down? You know, are the outcomes better? And then reevaluate if you know, what else needs to be done. But, you know, in terms of providing mental health services, you do it, one, because it's the right thing, but then number two, I believe that by doing so, the university will see better outcomes in terms of academic performance, in terms of graduation rate, and so on and so forth. Thank you.
Councilmember Englund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kenyanya, thank you for your interest in the position, and we appreciate that. Looking through your material, you have an impressive record of leadership with the student body at Duluth, and so I want to ask a couple of questions related to that.
Sure.
Two-part question. The first part of the question is, when you were advocating on behalf of the student body in Duluth with the Board of Regents, did you ever feel that you were in competition with the student leaders from the other campuses? That's the first question. And the second piece is, and how did you handle that? And then the second piece is there anything you learned as a student body leader interacting with the Board of Regents that would make you a better and help sort of populate your vision of service as a student region? What did you learn from your interaction with the board that would make you a better student region?
That's an excellent question. To answer the first part of that, you know, I was the student representative from Duluth, not for Duluth. And that's a distinction I had to learn right away. I had spent a year being on fire for representing UMD students, and I got to the board thinking that's what I was going to do, and that's not that job description. All eight of us are responsible for representing all students in the entire system because, you know, I sat on the finance committee, and there was only two of us students who sat there. If I'm only looking out for UMD students and they're only looking out for Crookston students, no one else is represented on finance. And that was a big learning curve for me because I would The docket is very long, depending on the board meeting, you know, 300-500 pages worth of materials, you know, to prepare for the meeting. And what that meant for me is that I had to educate myself. You know, if Pillsbury Hall's on the docket, maybe I've never been there, but I better figure out what's going on with Pillsbury Hall because I'm going to be one of two students able to speak on that in that committee meeting. And one way we mitigated that was before every meeting, we would have a meeting of students, the eight of us, and we would each update each other. You know, hey, Mike, you're on finance. Look out for this on this page, and this is what you need to know, and this is what folks are saying back on campus. And I'll be like, great, you know, you're on this committee. Look out for this. That's how we feel about this and that. So that was tough, and that kind of goes into the second question. I learned how tough that job is, and I mean, that sounds obvious, but there's so many competing interests. Again, all legitimate and good interests, at times, and how do you, you know, how do you decide when every decision you make is going to make someone happy and make someone else angry? So, you know, what I learned is you take in as much input as you can, and that was the role of the administration. You know, every meeting, different administrators, depending on the topic, would come and present on that because they're the experts on those specific things. And you ask questions, you scrutinize, you trust them too. And then with all that information, you make the best possible decision you can with the information you have.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Councilmember Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question that probably is near and dear to all students, that related to tuition. You know, the Board of Regents has a very large budget balance. Its methods of getting their money, one of them being tuition, other things such as the legislature, and it can't probably continue to increase tuition indefinitely. So I'm looking for your ideas on how do they balance this budget in ways other than the tuition?
It's an excellent question. And that's the million-dollar question, right?
It's a $4 billion question.
Right? My apologies. It's a huge budget. When I was first rep, they wouldn't put million because it was assumed, and I kept being confused. And I was like, this is just $100, and they're like, no, it's $100 million. I'm like, oh, wow, okay. But, you know, in terms of tuition, there's a couple things. What you're charging students is a result of what you're spending money on. The expenses are going to drive the tuition. I think the administration and the board have done a good job of cutting some administrative expenses and finding ways to be more efficient. I think you can only do that so much, you know, before you start critically, you know, affecting the mission part of the university. What two sources or two main sources of revenues do we have? State support and tuition. And I agree with you that going back to the tuition well over and over is unsustainable. So I think some of that's going to have to come from that state piece. And what the university is getting now is less as a percentage, is less than what it once was, adjusted for inflation and all that. And again, there's competing interests and whatnot. But I think we have to do a better job of communicating, not just to the legislature, but to the state, the value of the University of Minnesota. There's different studies and research and articles that come out that show what the economic impact of this campus is, or that research. Or one of them was, I think, for every dollar you put in, you get 13 out. That's a great, if you show me an investment that has that kind of return, I will pour all my money. I don't have much, but I will pour my $200 or whatever in there. So how do we communicate that better and I think the legislators get that, but if the public gets that more, they will support the legislature and kind of give them that mandate to, yes, double down on education and you know, fund it as you need. And then the other piece of that is just creative ways of partnering with, you know, a private enterprise, you know, to, I think a lot of those partnership opportunities exist, and a lot of them already are being done, but there's lots of, I mean, there's money out there, you know, in the private sector, and we have to find where our interests and our capabilities intersect with, you know, the private interests. I think, you know, an example, I think the Leibovitz School just partnered up with 3M on a frontline sales program, and I mean, all those partnerships exist all over the university. So I think we have to tell that story better on why this is a worthy investment, so that our representatives get that support from their constituents to give more money, and then to find how we can work with the private sector.
Thank you, yeah.
Councilmember Erickson.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm a professional lobbyist. Spent a lot of time around these halls. I love that my best clients and the most successful are those that have a great brand. The university is a wonderful brand, and that have an extensive grassroots network. And Margaret talked about the numbers. What do you think? Why the university has not been as successful having those two bedrock values in place, why have they not been as successful in the legislature? How might you be able to fix that? You may not know much about the first question, but what are your ideas about making them more relevant to the legislature? Because that is very much what Chairman McMillan and the regents have to do. You talked about the funds, not so much coming from tuition anymore. They have to get back to a good relationship with the state. And how might you see that in the future? You don't know much about why it's been bad or bad.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you that, you know, I don't know why on that first piece, and I don't want to speculate. But to answer that second part of the question, I think we have to make what the university is doing in terms of research and outreach and even teaching relevant to the people of Minnesota and relevant to the constituencies that the representatives serve. You know, we have to go to Senator Claussen and find out what is your district struggling with. You know, like what are the people of your district struggling with? What are the opportunities there? And find what can the university do to address that gap, to address that research? Or actually, what is the university already doing that maybe you just don't know of, right? And tell that message better, and then by helping, I mean, it's a two-way street, you know? Then we're helping the legislature, and they're helping us as well. So I think it's just finding, you know, maybe we can't assume what the state's needs are. You know, we're a land-grant institution. We're supposed to serve the state. And maybe we've just gotten it wrong on what the state is looking for and what the state needs now. But more importantly, what the state needs, you know, 20, 30 years from now. Higher ed moves very slowly, I've come to learn. So, you know, what we're implementing now and what we're doing now will really actually come to fruition in the coming decades. So I think we have to partner with our elected officials and the community to figure out where is Minnesota going so we can identify where the university fits in that direction. Thanks.
Council Member Farrell.
I just have a quick question. So the plan is to graduate this spring? Is that what with your undergraduate?
May 11th.
May 11th, okay, there you go. And so bravo. And I see that you were with Accenture in an internship and also with Ernst & Young. Mm-hmm. My guess is they both want you back. One looks like it was in Chicago. Was there anything about those internships in a for-profit business setting different than your leadership in the school setting that you would bring to your responsibility as a regent?
I did web programming, so I don't know if they need regents. Okay. I don't know if they need regents to do any coding, but
business analyst is how it's described.
I digress. I'm joking about that. I think it's a very different operating environment. You know, when if the product owner wanted to change a feature, we didn't need to put a whole committee together of students, staff, faculty, and community members to figure that out. You know, she said, this is how we're doing it. That's how we did it. And I quite honestly, I'm big on representation. I think everyone's voice should be included. There's probably more efficient ways to do it. Things take a long time in higher education, rightfully so a lot of the time, but I think there's some things we could learn from you know, the corporate world where things move a little faster. I think that's one thing I learned over there.
I'll ask one process question as kind of the last question. So we are really the first step in this process, and it's what I like to describe as the normal part of the process, where you submit an application, have an interview, but then the next step is we recommend names to the legislature, and that's a little less normal. It's a little more challenging. It's very labor intensive. Yeah. You're obviously a student in Duluth. Is that something you're, and I know we've actually talked about this process, so right. I think you're familiar with it, but is that something you're prepared for, the next steps should your name get passed along?
Absolutely, I am. And like you mentioned, I'm in Duluth, very happy and proud of that, but that 2.5 hours away. So, you know, that does pose that. But I think I got out ahead of it. And while I was home in Maple Grove on break, you know, a lot of the senators in the room, I've already, you know, tracked down. But I'm maybe not the best word, but I'm prepared for it. And I've spoken with folks, and I think I understand what the next, as best as one can understand what is next. And for this upcoming semester, I set my class schedule accordingly. You know, I have a few online classes to kind of grant me that flexibility. I still got to take them. I still got to graduate. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's end of our questions. I'll turn it back to you for any closing comments you'd like to make.
You know, I think what I want to leave you with is I wouldn't want to say I'm ready, or I understand the job of the region, or I'm going to execute it perfectly tomorrow, because I don't know if that would be accurate. I think it's one of those things you're going to learn on the job. You're going to learn every day, and you're going to continue to learn, which is one of the things that attracts me to it. You know, I enjoy a challenge, and I enjoy continually learning and developing myself. But I think I am well positioned in terms of my experience on campus, my experience with the university, you know, from being on a VP of university search committee, but also being on a smaller but more important search committee with the UMD Police Department and things like that, and working with students every day. And I've enjoyed it. In a way, it is a much different job than what I've been doing, but in a way, I almost think I'm asking to do what I've already been doing, and that's just serving the university and representing the folks at the university. So, you know, I appreciate your time, and thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.